You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Well, we may have ourselves a Commanders offensive coordinator, maybe, if we're praying and we're hoping and we're guessing and everybody's dreams come true. Britt Giroli, Nick Ashew, overtime till 10 tonight, together, first show together. This is going to be fun.
This is going to be fun. I realized when I walked in here that I have not been in here since I was very, very pregnant with my first kid. I am no longer pregnant. I have two children. It's been a little while. I'm excited to be back.
That's how you do the math, is you go back and go, okay, so I have a three-year-old. I hadn't had the first one yet. So, yeah, that's a while. That's the math. You came in here with a that's pretty badass, I'm going to be honest with you.
I remember thinking, like, my last show, like, man, it would be a hell of a story if my water broke here. Like,
you know, that story would be told forever, right?
Seriously, like, it would. Like, sorry, CK, someone's got to come in, fill in now. No, I can't wait.
I would say that would be one of the most legendary stories that would ever be told in sports media, if that were the case. You got me thinking about that now. I'm like, oh, wow.
Right?
That would be.
It would have.
Junkies 10 years from now still be telling, remember the time that Britt had her baby in the in this studio right here?
Do you think I'd have to pay for the carpet cleaning?
You might.
Yeah, they'd probably send me a bill. Definitely would not have been the birth plan, but yeah.
I still have something to say about the Commanders. I'm not done. God.
Damn it, I had notes. I had notes I didn't get to.
I had notes. I still had things to say. So, yeah, Mike McDaniel now on the market. And this has been, it's weird because you and I were talking before the show. And, you know, this is that weird time of year in the NFL where, you know, everybody talks about Black Monday and that's where coaches get fired. I'm never somebody to, like, root for somebody to be fired. But I also know that if you're not doing your job in this league, this is what happens. Like, that's just the way that it goes. But I'm surprised now that Mike McDaniel is available 2 days later until you said something that was a little conspiracy theory, and I like it. So I have a tinfoil hat in my home studio. I didn't bring it with me, but I kind of like your tinfoil hat conspiracy theory here.
Well, John Harbaugh was not available.
That's it.
On Monday.
That's it.
And this screams to me like he was good enough to stay. He was in Miami for four seasons.
Yep.
He had an over 500 record. This wasn't like a done deal that he was going to be gone. He was one of those guys who's kind of on the fringe. There was a couple coaches, as there are every year, where you're like, are they going to be gone? Or are they going to do what Tampa Bay did and, like, just fire everybody else, mm-hmm. right? Like, just get clean house with everyone else, but keep the head guy and let him start over. And what changed from Monday to where we sit here?
There you go.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's your answer.
So, you know, there's a lot more to this than just smoke because, mm-hmm. you know, you look at this and let's keep in mind with Miami that they interviewed the other Harbaugh back when they didn't even have a coaching vacancy. Mm-hmm. So this is, I think, a little bit of a scenario where there's a lot of smoke and it's probably true. And there's been some insiders that have gone and said the opposite, that, you know, they decided Monday that they had a talk, I think is what Jeff Darlington said.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, and then they kind of reversed course on that. Okay, maybe they did. I just find it a little hard to believe. This reeks of, for those of you who aren't familiar with my background, I'm a baseball writer, senior MLB writer for The Athletic. This reeks of Craig Counsell a few years ago when the Chicago Cubs did not fire David Ross until Craig Counsell was available. They land Craig Counsell. Then all of a sudden they fly to David Ross's house to tell him he's out of a job. This is the same kind of thing.
So you mentioned Jeff Darlington, who did have a very long tweet about this. If we're still calling them tweets. I still call them tweets. It's always going to be Twitter, even though it's a complete mess now. And one of the things he says was exactly what it was. Owner Steve Ross met with McDaniel on Tuesday. The outcome of the meeting left Ross very conflicted. He really likes Mike, loves his intelligence and offensive mind, but Tuesday's meeting resulted in some hard thoughts. And it's a long tweet, and it's, you know, a million characters at this point because Twitter's dead and it sucks. But that being said, you know, it's... Here's the thing with Mike McDaniel. First off, Danny said this earlier, so I'm going to steal this from him. Gas up the plane and get down to Miami now and pick him up, and don't let him leave until he signs his contract. He is the perfect fit and the perfect choice to be the Washington Commanders offensive coordinator, plain and simple. This isn't a hot take. This isn't me going out on a limb. I think most people generally feel this way. Has ties to the organization. Very close with Dan Quinn. If you know the backstory, helped him get sober. I mean, there is a very deep connection there between Mike McDaniel and Dan Quinn. Mike McDaniel will want to run the football more. They want to run the football more because we know Cliffy didn't want to do it. They'd have success running the football early in games, and he's like, so now we should throw on first down again. You're like, it's working. What are you doing? So it all makes sense. It just comes down to whether or not there's any interest that Mike McDaniel is a head coach, whether he wants to be a head coach now or in the future. These are the types of conversations that are going to be had. And if he maybe sees another opportunity, even as an offensive coordinator, that might be better than what Washington's got going on.
Yeah, I think you almost have to get McDaniel because otherwise, I think a lot of people were surprised, and we're going to talk to a bunch of guests later, but Ben Standing, who's covered the Washington Commanders for quite a while, I'm curious his take. I think a lot of people weren't surprised that there were changes, but they were surprised by Kingsbury, mm-hmm. right? They weren't sure that he was a guy that was necessarily going to go. So in my mind, I'm okay with you doing that if you get your top guy, if you get a guy who's going to actually fix the offense and is going to do what you think that he's capable of doing. Because if you look at what he did in Miami, you can have a lot of criticisms, but a lot of those offensive players got better. A lot of them took steps forward. And I think a lot of failed head coaches fans say, well, he didn't get it done there. Well, no, there's a big difference between being a coach and being an offensive coordinator. Mike McDaniel, I think when you look at his job as an offensive coordinator, there's no doubt that he has great respect around the league. And it's going to come down to, you know, does he get the head coaching job? But if he doesn't, does he view the Commander's job as better than the Lions' job? And we had this discussion while we were waiting to come on, and I would think yes, because there are more weapons in that Detroit Lions offense overall.
Ooh, those backs, those
certainly.
Running backs are good.
But Jared Goff, I think, where he is at his present state, Jared Goff 2 years ago, yes, we can make the case which quarterback would you rather have 2-3 years ago. Jared Goff right now, I don't think you can make the case is more intriguing of an option to work with than what you have with the Commanders here in D.C.
Mike McDaniel would also get the opportunity to have more say in how they build this offensive roster, right? Because the Commanders have a lot of cap space. Mm-hmm. You know, they got a high first-round pick, though pray to God they go edge rusher with that number 7 overall pick. Please get somebody that can actually come off the edge and get after a quarterback. But when you look at the quarterback situation that's there too for them, Jaden Daniels is young. Mm-hmm. He's on a rookie scale contract. It's crazy to think, though, he's already going to be entering year 3 right. next year in the NFL. So that clock is ticking where we start talking about Jaden Daniels' contract and the big money that could be involved in that deal. So if you're Mike McDaniel, you also get to look at, okay, do I want to have a little bit more say maybe in, and I don't know how much say they necessarily give him, but how much say could he have in building this offense and the type of weapons that they have? Do you like the young running backs? Do you see Bill Kroski Merritt as somebody that could be like a Devon Achane in Miami and give him those opportunities as a pass catcher out of the backfield and also as a back and give him the touches that this team said he deserved and then never got him with Cliff? So it's like there's a lot of situations there where maybe it is more established in Detroit, but the ceiling and the potential for even more success, and you're molding a little bit too with your own creativity, that exists in Washington.
I agree. And I think actually what you're looking at in Washington is kind of similar to Jared Goff, right? Where he couldn't really put it together. There were signs of this greatness when he was in LA. Mm-hmm. And then you saw it in Detroit. And I think you saw that great rookie year, obviously, mm-hmm. with Jaden. But I think, you know, he kind of took a step back. And then, yes, obviously injury is part of that. But I think you are still waiting to unlock that next level. And I think Mike McDaniel could unlock that next level.
There's also something to be said, too, and you just mentioned this a minute ago, but like some people just aren't necessarily head coaches. Some people, like a promotion is too much of a promotion. Not everybody's a CEO. Not everybody is somebody that needs to be at the highest possible level in their industry. They might be good where they are, and they're really, really good at it. Mike McDaniel is an elite offensive mind, mm-hmm. but being a head coach, it's more than that. You're focusing on the defense. You're focusing on, you know, allocating responsibilities all around to everybody in the coaching staff. You're showing up in all the meetings and watching film with different coaches, and every head coach has a different style. Some are called, like, you know, they call them walk-around coaches, where they're really just kind of like, hey, how's everybody doing? And you're kind of more of that CEO-style head coach where it's delegating the responsibility. Some are a little bit more involved. And I just don't think Mike McDaniel, listen, I love the dude, but little guy that's like kind of soft-spoken is just, you don't get that vibe of like NFL head coach. And that matters with these big egos that you have to deal with in the NFL. And we certainly saw that in Miami. If he can focus on what he's elite at, that's something that's enticing. But then the question does become then later, Does he want to be a head coach again? 2 years down the road, is he leaving for a head coaching job and getting another opportunity?
I don't think you worry about that, though. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I think if you get a chance to get your number one candidate, which, you know, who, if not him, who, right? Which is what I've been thinking all day. He has to be your top candidate. Mm-hmm. If not him, who? If you get a chance to get your top candidate, you can't worry about what's going to happen 2 years down the road. What if the Commanders win a Super Bowl in that stretch, right? People will be okay losing him if he goes and gets a head coaching job somewhere. I don't know if he gets, there's a lot of head coaching jobs open, right? I don't know if he gets another chance, though, this year. It might be a scenario where he has to go back to that coordinator role. The Commanders have to have success. And then he can maybe get another shot. I don't know if he's going to be a guy who's going to immediately step into. He's not John Harbaugh. He's going to not going to immediately pick his next destination. That's not a scenario here. So I think they have a legitimate shot at getting him.
I think it's the perfect fit across the board everywhere. Like it would give this offense new. Like you'd have the innovation that's there and the creativity, and you'd also have some of the traditional running the football and taking advantage of the run game when it's actually working. It's a perfect fit. It makes so much sense. If he was ever looked at as a head coach again, you have these conversations with him and say, look, if you want to be a head coach again, we just need to make sure we have a plan in place for a successor. Because we've seen around the NFL what happens when coordinators leave. Look at the Eagles. And I know, listen, the Eagles have had multiple situations. They've lost coordinators. Things have gone downhill. Look at Detroit this year. So coordinators don't get enough respect and really are more important than they've ever been, especially on the offensive side of the football, than they've ever been before in the NFL. Speaking of the front office, do we really believe that they're meddling? Or does it feel smelling a little fishy? A little fishy. We'll see. We'll see. It's overtime on The Fan.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Britt Ciroli, Nick Ashew, overtime on The Fan. The Commanders have reportedly requested permission now to talk to Cowboys tight end coach Linda Wells for their offensive coordinator position. I don't care. Just go fly down and get Mike McDaniel on board now. That's it. We don't need to even talk to anybody else. I know there's a process, but I don't care. just get it done. That's it.
There needs to be a big board somewhere of all the names and all the openings. Not just, I'm not talking head coach, GM. Those are pretty easy to keep track of. I'm talking coordinators. I'm talking all these jobs because, I mean, if you think about it, how many people are we talking about that are turning over in the NFL? 300?
I mean, you got to think, it's not just head coaches. There's coordinators and position coaches and all these other positions that are open. And it's a lot to keep track of.
It really is.
You're not lying.
I mean, head coach openings, we got the Dolphins, the Ravens, the Giants, the Titans, Falcons, Cardinals, Browns, Raiders, GMs, Dolphins, Falcons, right? But then there's so many other tiers under that. Yeah. And now we're going to get into, you almost forget that there's games being played. We're going to preview those later in the show. It is wild card weekend in the NFL. We got 3 days worth of games, but there is so much going on right now news-wise that it's just like out of control.
The NFL wants to be a year-round event.
They are.
And it is. And it's been, I mean, listen, we watch fat dudes run in tights and see how fast they can run the 40, and it gets ratings.
Yeah.
It's football. It's just what it is.
It's crazy. I'll never forget my first year on the beat. I go to Toronto, and it's like, I don't even remember what month it was, but I put on ESPN, the Canadian version, expecting to see
TSN?
Yeah, expecting to see news, you know, like football or, you know, baseball, whatever. And it's the NHL Combine instead.
Guys NHL are like, Combine,
and
yeah.
It is as big as the NFL Combine. Guys are like on bikes, like breathing into things. And I'm like, wow, like you never see that here, obviously. Like it's not televised. It is like a whole event.
Oh, they were doing the lung capacity test?
They were doing it. And this was like years
ago. And it was televised?
And the whole thing. And I was like, wow, I am not.
Oh, sorry, Britt, up here, don't you know? We actually like to watch the hockey combine.
Hockey,
up here.
It was crazy.
I don't have a good Canadian
accent. It was crazy. And, you know, I'm a hockey fan myself. yeah. big hockey fan. Grew up like a diehard Boston Bruins fan. Ray Bourque posters on my wall. Four-time Norris Trophy winner, but we'll talk about that later. And it was just crazy that, you know, but that is what the NFL has become, where every single, there is no off day for NFL writers. The games, there's only so many games, and you're always like, well, what can people talk about? There is news every day, all the time. We are just at the beginning of this interview circuit, and what's going to make it even juicier this year is obviously, and we're going to get to this a lot later, in depth, the John Harbaugh news leaving Baltimore after 18 seasons. And, you know, that complicates this because he's going to be the belle of the ball with all those openings that I just posted. And it's going to have a ripple effect and almost like a holdup effect. If he, obviously, the news has come out that he's not going to interview this weekend. Mm-hmm. Is he going to wait for maybe another firing somewhere? That's kind of, you know, a little have word on the street.
Whispers behind the
potentially.
Scenes.
Yeah. But, you know, if he takes a while and drags it out, think of how many teams are going to be in limbo over this, thinking they might have, they can't want to hire a coach because their number one choice is still waiting. And that could also affect the Commanders because, you know, if you look at a guy like McDaniel, if he thinks he has a shot at, let's say, the Titans job, right? And the Titans are still waiting because they're like, well, we haven't heard no from Harbaugh. This could be kind of a excruciating offseason for teams who have holes.
All because of one guy.
Yes.
Really. And it's, it's the trickle-down effect, and it sometimes happens in free agency. Sometimes it happens with coaches. It's with coaches and John Harbaugh. And again, I'm totally with you. It's like all of a sudden Mike McDaniel is now no longer the coach of the Dolphins because, who became available? And listen, this is, I don't care if it takes forever. As long as he's the offensive coordinator for the Commanders, I'll be fine. And it's not him leaking any stories to whoever, like Jordan Schultz and that. I 100% believe that story yesterday was leaked by Cliff Kingsbury, Jordan Schultz, about like stuff going on and the, you know, the front office meddling with everything that's going on. Here's what that all screamed to me. And you've been on a beat and you've been actually like covering things versus just yapping like me, like I've done for my career. When I see that, and I, as somebody that grew up a fan of this Commanders team, so it's not like I've just like come to this mark and like this is my team. I've seen all the dysfunction. I've felt it. I've watched it. I've talked about it on this station, on Team 980, and in all of its names that are there, and everything in this market. And I've suffered through so much dysfunction as a fan, as a, and I'll say it in air quotes, professional. Stop laughing, Wesley. It's not funny. I am a professional. Thank you very much. To see a report that says the front office is meddling with the coaching staff and their decisions, and then at the end, there's a lot of S going on there, screams, let's plant these keywords and phrases so everybody that has scars and remembers how it used to be thinks, oh no, it's happening again. It just felt so, I understand that people still look at this and want to have things proven to them by Adam Peters and the rest of the front office. I get that, and you absolutely have the right to do it. Everybody should want to say, hey, you got stuff to prove, but this ain't the same situation as before. It's just not.
Yeah, exactly. And for those who are like, what are you guys talking about? Jordan Schultz had a report, I believe it was yesterday, that said basically that the front office has been meddling and, you know, caused a lot of issues and, you know, nobody wanted the changes, you know, where the Commanders fired Joe Witt and Cliff Kingsbury and Bobby Johnson and you know, people in particular, Kingsbury and Johnson were the ones that, according to this report, bothered people. Now, my problem is, I read this, and you know, as someone who does investigative and enterprise work for The Athletic, it screamed as a single source story. Didn't have comment from the team, from the other side, from anything, which is like kind of 101. But also, interestingly enough, maybe this is another one of my tin hat theories.
I love this. I'm bringing a tin foil hat next time we do a show.
Jordan Schultz is the same reporter who later breaks that Cliff Kingsbury is interviewing for two head coaching jobs. So that seems like maybe it could be related to a relationship with someone who maybe is upset that they were let go.
It's almost like Cliff Kingsbury was standing out on the lawn burning the hoodie and the pictures that he borrowed that he said he'd never give back, and now he's just mad. You ruined everything, and I'm telling everybody. That's kind of what this felt like. Good thing enough, we have Ben Standing coming up next, who's going to maybe give us a little bit more insight into whether or not this is just a little smoke, whether there's a little bit more. We'll talk to Ben Standing next. Britt Giroli, Nick Ashew on Overtime.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Brit Giroli, Nick Ashew on Overtime. Support people with disabilities in your community by donating your unwanted vehicle to Melwood. Donating is fast, free, and easy. Visit Melwood.org or call 877-MELWOOD for more information. Commanders at least having other conversations with even the tight ends coach for the Cowboys now. This just came in. Lunda Wells, Cowboys tight ends coach, is interviewing for the offensive coordinator job. But we all know what everybody wants. Everybody wants Mike McDaniel. I would assume, Britt, you seem to. I certainly have been begging for it, screaming for it. In fact, I've been praying and trying to manifest this into the universe, and we're getting one step closer.
It feels like it, but you know what? It really got to, for me, I have to run all my Commanders' opinions by an expert.
You can.
And by that, I mean Ben Standig.
Ben Standig, last man standing on Substack, Commanders and NFL reporter, our pal, our buddy. Hello, Benjamin. It's been a busy stretch for you, hasn't it, my friend?
It has. I mean, it's not like it's abnormal for this team, but you thought maybe after last year we wouldn't be having such a busy offseason, but here we are. But by the way, Nick, your show in your garage, my cousin, he's been in your garage multiple times. We'll have to talk about that.
I totally forgot to text you about this, that your cousin is my neighbor now, and he comes to Game Day Garage. We won't spend the whole segment on this, but we will talk about this because at some point, I need you out there. I've got Michael Jenkins and Ryan Horvath coming out Saturday for the Bears-Packers game, doing a live stream. I'm plugging it for free. I don't care.
What is Game Day Garage?
I guess if we're going to talk about it, we're going to do this real quick. So I do a live stream. It was every Thursday, and now we're expanding. We've added some talent. It's a live watch party now we're doing NFL. We're, surprise, expanding to some other things in 2026. It's a independent project that I've started to build. I started just watching football in my garage on Sundays with friends, and I said, you know, people like to watch people watching stuff. I'm going to just start streaming this and start doing some stuff with it. And turned into a thing this year, and I've got a whole little production team. It's become a real thing. Game Day Garage, follow it on Instagram and TikTok. We're on TikTok. Ben, you got to come out at some point, my friend. I totally forgot about this, and I'm so mad that I didn't text you. Thank you for bringing that up.
No problem. I was actually, my cousin held, they did Thanksgiving? No. Yeah, Thanksgiving at their house this year. So I actually now know where they are. I didn't see where you are, but now I know where they are, so we can make it happen.
Come out Saturday, 8 o'clock, if you want to hang out with Jenks and Ryan Horvath and me. Just if you want to come by, buddy.
Now you're putting him on the spot.
I'm absolutely putting him on the spot. That's what I do.
Oh, gosh.
Totally reasonable. This team, you know, you got to be careful at any minute something could drop, so you never know. But yeah, let me think about that.
Okay.
All right. Ben, I got to ask you, if not because you are my expert, as I said when we brought you on this show, a lot has been made, obviously, about McDaniel. Is he your number one on your board to bring in as offensive coordinator? And if not him, who?
Yeah, I think, you know, we don't quite know exactly what the criteria is for Dan Quinn and Adam Peters. And, you know, we're still sort of sorting out what ultimately went wrong with Cliff Kingsbury that they decided that after the 2024 season was epic and this year was less so, what was it that they said, hey, this isn't working for us? Now, if it's a shift in philosophy towards like this Shanahan sort of, you know, run first system, then McDaniel would make a ton of sense. He's part of that tree. He also has, of course, all kinds of connections here. He was with Mike Shanahan's staff early part of last decade. He was with Dan Quinn in Atlanta. He also is very candid about how Dan Quinn helped him become sober and helped him, you know, keep his career, basically. And then he was in San Francisco when Adam Peters was there. So he checks off every single box as far as connections go. He's been successful. The wonder, though, is he does not, as far as I know, have a prior relationship with the quarterback, Jaden Daniels. And that can't be overlooked here, which is where he's my number one if we're talking experience. If we're talking the Jaden Daniels part of it, I've been sort of talking myself into David Blau, who's the 30-year-old assistant quarterback coach who's now apparently gotten requested to meet with the Lions for their OC job. He's very interesting, very young, very inexperienced, but he might be the one guy left that they could pair with Daniels to keep Jaden Daniels feeling comfortable while getting a guy who maybe is, you're getting in on early on a guy who some people think could be the next thing. So McDaniels is of the things we know, I think for me would probably be number one, but Blau would be the interesting sideways move if they want to keep somebody who Daniels has more of a tie with.
Is there a risk there too? So one of the biggest concerns for me this offseason, Ben, is, you know, the fact that this team's going to have some level of continuity offensively. I mean, you can't keep switching offensive systems with a young quarterback. We've seen that with plenty of quarterbacks. It hurts their development. I know there's a million other factors that are involved with this. But, you know, let's say Mike McDaniel is the guy. Do you think that there's a chance that he's looking for another head coaching job, or he kind of looks and says, you know what, I'm an offensive guy and I stick with that? Because I get it, like, if your offensive coordinator is good, a lot of times they leave for head coaching jobs. There's only so much control that you have. But to me, I look at that and say, no matter what, like, they've got to have a level of like a contingency plan or a succession plan. If it's McDaniel or anybody else, they hire an offensive coordinator to know, we want to keep the same system if it works for Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, no, I think for sure. So like on the one hand, you know, they've had a pretty deep group as far as quarterbacks go. You had coaches go, you had Kingsbury, Tevita Pritchard, who of course left during the season to become the Stanford head coach. You have Blau, you have assistant head coach Brian Johnson, who was the Eagles offensive coordinator. So there's a lot of options, and I don't think that was by randomness that Dan Quinn wanted, like you just said, to have a lot of options, because things change, and Dan Quinn being a defensive guy, he needs multiple options on offense. I think that's why they went the way they went. The counter to that is, like, whether Kingsbury was out now because they decided they wanted to move on or he took another job, I don't know if there's another coach in the league who would run the offense the same way that he did, where they are way out of whack as far as shotgun usage and no huddle usage the last couple seasons compared to the rest of the league. Now, in the case of David Blau, who is tied with Kingsbury. He worked with Kingsbury when he was a player at Arizona, but he also was in Detroit with Ben Johnson, who of course is, you know, one of the better offensive minds in the league as well. So I don't know for sure where Blau falls under with those two people, but assuming he draws from both, then maybe, you know, that's a Kingsbury succession plan. But to your point, if it's a McDaniel part of this, then you need multiple guys to come in who can sort of do that, because you're right, he could easily be a one and done and take a head coaching job in a year. So this is part of the issue when you take the defensive coach over an offensive coach and go that route. I'm not saying I knock it, but this is part of the thing you have to worry about. At least on the McDaniel side, there's way more options in the Shanahan world than there is Shanahan offensive world than there is in this, in what Kingsbury does. Even if pro snap, they're all somewhat the same.
Talking to Ben Standing, who runs a terrific Substack, by the way, Last Man Standing. Subscribe if you aren't already. He does a great job with that. Ben, it's interesting because I think people were surprised, or a certain group of people were surprised by Kingsbury kind of getting the ouster. But you wrote this like great post about it, about how, you know, his offense was under review, and people seem to take issue with that. This was before he left. I mean, when you look at that extreme tempo offense that he had, were you surprised that they cut paths with him, that they cut bait, that they were like, hey, we got to fix this. This has to go another direction.
I mean, I was surprised in like, if you had said to me 2 months ago, maybe even a month or so ago, I'd have been like, I don't know. I mean, the defense was really, you know, the culprit this year. Injuries, of course, a huge factor, and the lack of depth became exposed by the injuries. But the offense was obviously not great. But when you don't have Jaden Daniels for majority of the season, Terry McLaurin misses a massive chunk of time. They didn't have receiver depth. Like, there's a lot of things to say. Hey, Kingsbury had overcome a lot. And I think in general, he did a pretty good job. But I do think, to me, it was starting around that Vikings game, week 14, when they lost 31-0. And again, it's not all on the offense. And, you know, there were a couple moments where things have gone a different way. All of a sudden, maybe they're in that game and we're not having the conversation we're having now. But it felt to me in real time that Dan Quinn might have, like, lost it a little bit, that he was, like, getting extra frustrated. And I think one of the concerns with Kingsbury, Dan Quinn talks all the time about complimentary football, which is one of those terms that I just want to, like, punch in the face because it's like, oh, come on, I get it, whatever, it's not that exciting. But I feel like Dan Quinn, for him, it is a big deal that you marry what the offense is doing with what the defense is doing. And not that Kingsbury's system was, like, overly up-tempo, but he couldn't consistently stay with the run game. And when the defense was getting as mashed as it often was, I think you needed the offense to be a little more ball control, and that wasn't always happening. So I was surprised in a broad sense because, obviously, 2024 was unbelievable. But from a longer-term perspective, I just kind of get the feeling that, like, Quinn was – I don't know if this is where I want to be long-term. But I don't know if this is sustainable. And, you know, as you mentioned, like, I started writing that story several days before anybody was even discussing it. I was asking questions at press conferences about this because, to me, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. And then, obviously, that feeling proved to be accurate.
Talking to Ben Standig on Overtime – on the defensive side, we know this was a complete mess, and they've got like a million things they need to do this offseason, but I'm going to guess here that you and I are probably on the same page and that pass rush is the most important thing for them, biggest priority this offseason.
Yeah, I think, if we're talking positions, it is the only position that Adam Peters gave us any insight into something they might be looking at. You know, great. I think we all kind of recognize they need more of a pass rush. I think for me, honestly, just really even just broad strokes, defensively, they need playmakers. I don't know, care really where it is, but they need somebody that the opposing offenses have to account for. Somebody who is a difference maker. They just don't have that at any level, you know, which is why, like, if you look at the draft, I wouldn't normally say draft a safety, right, at 7, but a lot of people think Caleb Downs from Ohio State is the number one guy in this draft. Just he plays a position that's not typically drafted that high. I wouldn't maybe have an issue taking him. That's a whole ways off. But, like, any position could work from that perspective, getting a playmaker. But, yes, defensive end would be number one. And I would just say for offense, it's sort of the broad need is speed. The specific need is probably receiver opposite McLaurin.
All right, Ben Standig, last man standing on Substack. Great to talk to you again, buddy. And then maybe I'll see you at a Game Day Garage at some point.
Well, look, if you can get Britt there, because I got a lot of Orioles questions, and I didn't want to waste more time here with that. So if you can get her to show up, too, so I can bother her, that would be great.
We'll do it. We'll have a little baseball opening day, buddy.
Sounds awesome. Great.
See you, man.
See you, Ben. Thanks, guys.
All right. Yeah, it's funny. Like, the one thing everybody can agree on is that pass rush for this Commanders team, defensively, biggest issue by far.
Yeah, and it's good to talk to Ben because, like he said, he was one of the few people asking questions about Kingsbury before it became an issue. Mm-hmm. Like, the beat guys and women do such a great job because it's so much of it is what you're seeing and also what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think Ben with his Substack does such a great job of kind of getting to the heart of this issue and, you know, what this team has, what is going on. And he's right. I don't think the way they were functioning offensively was going to be something that was sustainable. It's not going to get the best out of that offense right now. So it does make sense now that it's happened. Now they got to go out and they've got to get a considerable upgrade.
It kind of felt like, honestly, this coaching staff was the safety net, like not the main coaching staff they wanted. If you remember, I mean, we know Ben Johnson was the head coach they really wanted. Dan Quinn, it was like, all right, fine, we need somebody. Guess we'll hire Dan Quinn. And it just kind of felt that way with really the entire thing. Cliff Kingsbury was all of a sudden name they just hired. And we went, wait, what, Cliff Kingsbury, really? And year one was great for the most part. Listen, they won 12 games. It masks a lot of issues. But this season really showed a lot of the problems this team has. The Wizards went out and made themselves a nice little addition. I hate it so much, Britt. I can't stress enough how much I hate this trade
really?
That the Wizards made. I cannot wait to talk about this.
I can't wait to hear this.
Britt Giroli and Nick Ashew on Overtime. Britt Giroli, Nick Ashew, Overtime on The Fan. Thanks to Ben Standig. Jumped on with us. We'll talk to Anthony Armstrong, former Redskins wide receiver at 8. Zach Kiefer at 7:45. Go around the NFL with him as well. Trae Young is a Washington Wizard. See a lot of people getting very excited about this, Britt. I hate it. I hate this trade so much. I understand the financial side of it. Here's where I am. Because
okay.
I know you said you are shocked. I know I am like the most anti-Trae Young trade out of like anybody in this city, so I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Trae Young's game is so unappealing, it's unbelievable. He is the most inefficient player in the NBA, does not play even a slight amount of defense. And for everybody that says, well, they don't play defense in the NBA anymore, I'm actually starting to prioritize that again. He is tiny. He's injury prone. He could go 3 of 15 from the floor one night and get you 30 the next night. He's ball dominant. Yeah, people are like, oh, well, he gets assists.
He has a lot of assists.
Okay, you know who else did? Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook never made anybody better. There are a lot of point guards over the course of the NBA that have like put up empty stat assist numbers, but they're not. It's not like they're making anybody better. Like one of the best point guards we've ever seen in the NBA is Chris Paul. Not Chris Paul now, prime Chris Paul. And if you don't remember what Chris Paul was in his prime, you need to go watch, because Chris Paul is one of the all-time great point guards. But that is a true facilitator. That is a true get everybody involved. Trae Young is a ball-dominant guard that's going to take so many shots and so many opportunities away from this young team. Now, on the smaller side of things, though, I don't think they're going to let this happen. There's the chance that it's just enough with the way this team has been playing to risk the chance that they fall out of the top eight with that top eight protected first-round pick in a draft. You do not give up a first-round pick in this draft because it is loaded. I only understand the idea that he has a $49 million player option for next year that he's definitely going to pick up, that then becomes an expiring contract that you can use to move in other trades. But here's the thing. You can have the cap space, but you also have to have players want to come play for you. Now, yes, you can make a trade, absorb some other salary. There are things there. I understand. I have had so much respect for what the Wizards front office has been doing. The true slow play, the real grind, like, yeah, it sucks, but real rebuild. This, to me, has the feeling of potential setback. And I was texting with, had a call with one person very deep in the NBA and another NBA person I talked to today as well. They are going to at least evaluate the potential for a Trae Young extension. They're at least thinking about it. That scares the hell out of me. That's a terrible decision. And the other thing that I do know for a fact, having a conversation with somebody that is very deep in the NBA, nobody else wanted Trae Young but the Wizards.
Yeah.
The reports that anybody else wanted him, even the Minnesota thing, leaked. Nobody wanted him. Now, there have been some other reporters out, and I'm not a reporter, so the beauty of this is I'm just telling you this because I don't have to report it, but I know this having talked to people that are very trusted in the NBA. Nobody else wanted Trae Young, and the Wizards were his choice because they're the only team that actually really wanted him. The Minnesota thing was not really out there, and this happens a lot, right?
Yeah,
stuff
happens
gets
all the
leaked.
Time.
This happens to create a narrative, but I cannot stress enough how little they need to play Trae Young this year and then trade him with that expiring contract. This guy is not going to do anything to make this team. You certainly don't want to be better now, and it's not going to help them long term. They've got a lot of very good young talent on this roster. They need to do everything they can to stockpile picks and keep building around this young core, and then you can start talking about trades that bring in some other veterans and some stars.
Yeah, well, I'm going to counterpoint real quick. As someone who is not a diehard NBA fan, mm-hmm. if I'm going to my pecking order, like we're going baseball, we're going NFL.
Baseball, huh? Really? As you covered? Yeah. Well, interesting.
we're going baseball, we're going NFL, we're going NHL, we're going college, and then we're probably going NBA. But anyway, I guess my question is, and I agree with you, I don't think anybody else wanted him, and that does happen all the time where markets get inflated, mm-hmm. you know, and all of a sudden he wants Washington. Well, did he want Washington if you gave him truth serum, or did Washington want him and all of a sudden became he want Washington, right? That's probably what happened. I am a little confused because it did seem like the Wizards' whole plan was to live and die with these young guys and go the methodical, slow route, and this is year three, right, of this rebuild.
Yep.
And they are probably not going to play him, right? They're going to just bench him. Even if the NBA looks into it, he can claim, oh, my knees, has some knee issues. Right? How can you evaluate whether someone's back hurts, right? Like the phantom IL in baseball is a real thing. It exists for a reason. It's going to be the case here. They're probably going to bench him. You know, you're not going to see him. He's not going to be a factor this year. My question, though, is does it excite the fan base? Does a guy getting a real point guard, getting a real guy like this, a guy who led the league in assists, so let's give him a little credit, last year.
Empty stats, Britt. Empty stats.
A guy who gets doubled up a lot, does that help the young players? Like, having that press? And also, does it help that Washington is seen, even if it may not have been true, seen as a little bit of a destination? Does it help Washington's reputation? Does it help put butts in the seats? Does it get season ticket holders or just random fans excited again because they haven't had someone with this gravitas since probably, what, Bradley Beal?
Bradley Beal. Really, John Wall. John Wall was a more polarizing player than Bradley Beal even was, I think, like in his prime. John Wall was sort of the bigger personality when they were those two were here together, which it looks like, by the way, they teased. I think they're retiring John Wall's number. It's what it's looking like. They're teasing that on social media. Look, Trae Young is a hooper, right? He's a guy that you put the ball in his hand, he's going to go put up shots, and he can go get you 40. But he is also somebody that takes away touches, shots, opportunities, minutes, if he's out there from all of these young guys that they've got. And he's not somebody that's been regarded as a great teammate over the years. Now, yeah, allegedly he's now tried to mature a little bit and learn and be a little bit better. Okay, well, if somebody's a jackass for like 7 or 8 years and then all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, I've turned over a new leaf. Well, you got to show it for a little bit longer than 6 months. Like, right. You have to show more of that. It's, if it's really just becomes one of those. So when the Raptors traded for Brandon Ingram, they basically didn't play him and they tried to tank, and like that's how that went. And now Brandon Ingram has an extension, and Brandon Ingram's a great player and it's worked out in Toronto and all those things. If that's sort of their route where it's like, we traded for him, but he's not really going to play this year, and we're going to make sure that we are tanking to stay inside that top eight, you know, safety net for us so they can keep their first round pick. Fine. And then trade him in the offseason or trade him midway through next year so you get that expiring contract and all those. That's the only way that this works. But if he's on the floor regularly, and if the mindset is, well, we'll get some people to show up to games, they've done the whole, like, we just want to, like, squeak into the playoffs and just enough. Like, there's a shallow way to look at building an NBA team, and there's the deeper, bigger picture way. The shallow way is win for the 8 seed or get to the play-in tournament now. It used to be the 8 seed with the Wizards, then it was just the play-in tournament. And it was just so frustrating watching a team that was stuck in NBA purgatory.
Sure.
Year after year after year, where you don't win if you're stuck in NBA purgatory. Either you got to tank, bottom that thing out, and build through the draft and free agency and the way that this works, or go out, make big trades, and try to win now. They were stuck in that middle. Now they're finally doing it the right way. It sucks, but D.C. is a hoops town, too. People always forget this. People love good basketball in this city.
Yes, and remember, do you remember Georgetown back in the day?
Yes, when Georgetown was winning, when the Wizards had John Wall and Bradley Beal in those playoff series against the Hawks. And, you know, people care about basketball in the city. The problem is, just haven't had good basketball in so long. People in this town understand what a rebuild entails. And it's better that if you're a team that is just a dumpster fire record-wise, but young and up-and-coming and learning and growing and fun to watch with a blueprint for what the future is and a plan versus, you know, we got Bradley Beal, we're going to sign him another max deal until we can't sign him any more max deals anymore. Everybody knows that's not the way that you run it, and that's when fans get so frustrated, not with a rebuild with a bunch of young guys, which, by the way, they've got some really talented... Keyshawn George and Alex Sarr, the year one to year two growth of Alex Sarr has been unbelievable. He's so much tougher and smarter and more confident. This is what you need to continue to see the rest of this year. So you cannot allow Trae Young throwing up a bunch of shots to kind of to ruin all of that progress.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to play. Everything I've read, everything I've heard, people I've talked to. And by the way, speaking of talking to people, we're going to have David Aldridge, Hall of Fame. David Aldridge,
the legend.
Talk later on in the show about this, give his expert opinion. He was all over this with a column in The Athletic today. But here's my other question for you, as someone who, again, is not knee-deep in the NBA world. Mm-hmm. If you want these young players to have meaningful touches next year, which is what the Wizards want, isn't having a legit point guard, isn't having a guy like that in year four of the rebuild, a guy who, like I said, is a guy who passes the ball. He's excellent at lobs. Like, a guy who gets double-teamed a lot. Can't that help them going forward? Can't that help the growth? I get he's not a great teammate, but sometimes when guys change scenery and they have that rep already, they are angels at their next place. They realize that they're running out and that if they run themselves as a bad teammate in another place, it's not going to be the team to blame. It's going to be them, right? Like, what, you get one mulligan a lot of times in sports. And a lot of times when guys get that change of scenery, and let's call a spade, they gave up nothing. They didn't have to give up any draft picks. It was just, you know, you look at the hall, you're Atlanta, and you're like, wow, like addition by subtraction, I guess. Is there a world where this helps them?
So I'm a big believer in you know, fresh starts for people, and I think that can make a difference. The issue is, though, if you're Trae Young coming to this team, are you looking around going, I'm getting put into a culture that's winning, that has playoff aspirations, that has discipline, or are you going into a place where you go, you check my resume versus you kids, I'm in charge now. This is my team now. That's the difference. And I think that would be the biggest and most concerning thing. Are there going to be times in games where he's waving young kids off and an opportunity late in the game when this should be about getting those opportunities for Bilal Coulibaly or anybody? And instead it's Trae Young taking those shots late in the game, which, by the way, is somebody I would put the ball in his hands for still. Look, again, he is a hooper, but he's not somebody that's efficient, that makes the team around him better.
Right.
It is so wildly inconsistent. It's just, to me, it feels very hollow unless it's based more on exactly what I said, where it's, you're really not playing him much this year. You're looking to trade him either in the offseason or by the deadline next year with that expiring contract, and it's for a longer play. If it's for a longer play and it doesn't affect what's going on the court now, which means good losses. I'm a big fan of good losses with this team because there was a stretch. We just had the Wizards have been playing better than the Thunder recently. The Thunder had a 12-game stretch. They're just 6-6, and the Wizards were 7-5 over that same stretch. We were talking about the Thunder winning 74 games this year. So that shows you where the Wizards were. And as much as you want to see this team improve, and I really do like this rebuild and the talent they have on this roster, I do not want to see them win this year. This draft is loaded, Britt.
Right. This is one of the best drafts that the NBA has had in recent years. Oh. So I agree with you. And I think the tank is going to continue. I don't think this trade changes the tank at all. What's so unfortunate about being in sports media sometimes is we have to immediately react. And you're talking about, I'd be okay with this if this and this happens
right
next year, right? So, you know, it, especially like in baseball, we're constantly doing trade grades. And it's so silly because you're like, oh God, this guy in A ball could be like the next Clayton Kershaw.
It's like strength of schedule in the NFL in May.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, and the same thing in baseball. And if you're just like, God, it is so hard because we all look at these things in a vacuum, and that's not how sports play. And I do think that when you look at the Wizards front office and what they've done over the last couple of years, they do deserve the benefit of the doubt because they have slowly changed the perception, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at something like this and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and you know, maybe David Aldridge can put it a little more in perspective, you're kind of like lukewarm on this idea, but you also have to trust the process that they've been in for so long, even though this move doesn't fit it, because he's not a young player. He's not a defensive first player, right? And weren't they specifically looking for size? He's not a big guy.
No.
So it doesn't fit kind of what they've done. And so you kind of have to sit back and say, okay, is there something we're missing here? Are they playing that long game you're talking about? Is this a case where, you know, they have a personal relationship with him and they think that he can actually be positive? I don't know, but I think they deserve a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because of what they've done recently.
And we'll talk to David Aldridge at 9, Zach Kiefer at 7:45, Anthony Armstrong also at 8. It's Overtime on The Fan. Britt Giroli, Nick Ashew, Overtime on The Fan. I gotta get it. There's a lot of people that just kind of see the Trae Young trade in a vacuum and say, hey, we got a star here. Listen, Trae Young's fun to watch if he's not on your team and he's going off for 40. You just get the 3 of 15 nights that make it a lot more difficult to watch. So we'll see. I really like what this front office is doing in Washington. I do.
I think people are excited because you haven't had like a talent like this in a while, like probably Beal.
I get it. But like, again, they've the whole like, you know, guy puts up a bunch of shots on a losing team has happened plenty here. Again, there are really smart basketball fans in this city that know that this doesn't really actually sustain any real success. And that's like, you know, I think that really matters, is this fan base wants real sustainable basketball, real winning basketball. And the path that they're on is the path. No, we are on air right now. Yeah. Yeah, we're on right now. Come on, you can have... Yeah, we're good. I love this. Britt walks back and goes, I thought you were on air. Oh, we are. It's fine. You got your watermelon. You got protein shake. Yeah,
I thought
fun.
You were just chilling back here. I thought you were still talking because you guys were still talking basketball when
I left. You never have to worry about dead air with me, so it's fine. I promise.
You guys were still talking.
Yeah,
you guys were still talking basketball when I left. And I thought you were still just chatting off air. But I love that you have a strong opinion about this because I feel like I've seen a lot of like lukewarm people, mm-hmm. and I haven't seen anybody that's been like, oh my gosh, this is a terrible move. Except for you.
Hey, listen, I'm not afraid to go against the grain. And then if you throw Chris Russell in the mix, do we know how Chris Russell felt today? Do we know?
No, we do not know.
Okay.
I'm
curious.
I gotta say, I think it's a terrible idea.
I do have a question for you. So if you're 14 years old and here in DC, would you buy his jersey?
No, because he's not gonna be here.
Yes.
Trae
I think
Young?
I think if you're 14 years old, you do.
So we're split here because I agree.
It's a real star.
He's a marketable player, and that's why people are excited.
It's going to be a jersey that's no longer relevant
in
like a year.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Although I will say, to have a jersey that no longer is being worn by anybody, to just like old random jerseys, I have so many at home, so there's something to be said for that too. You know what? Maybe I'll get a Trae Young jersey.
You know,
what is your most random jersey?
You can wear it to your garage hangouts.
I can wear it in Game Day Garage. It's a great idea. There you go. What you said?
Most random jersey you have? I gotta think of mine.
All right.
Oh gosh.
So real player though, right? Because you know I have the fake jerseys on my home set up from movie characters. Let me see. I have a Michael Finley Mavs jersey. I have a Marcus Camby Knicks jersey. That goes way back in the day. And he also had a second stint there. Charles Barkley Suns jersey would be pretty random. Trying to think if there's anything more random. Oh, I have a Tracy McGrady Magic jersey, but it's the throwback pinstripe Magic jersey. So when they weren't wearing them when he was there, that's pretty random. You know, I got like Kobe and Grant Hill old school, like red, white, and blue Pistons jersey going way back to when I was a kid. I have a lot of old NBA jerseys.
I have a D'Angelo Russell Golden State Warriors jersey.
Okay, that's good. I mean, you win by far. I mean, that's not even close.
Okay, we're talking about, why did nobody ask me? Like, I don't own sports jerseys?
Well, we're letting you finish your snack first, you know?
I'm not even eating my snack. I just got it out in preparation for the next snack.
Right.
You don't want to be mean to be hungry. That would be terrible show. I have a Matt Leiner Arizona Cardinals jersey.
That's a great one.
Isn't that a pretty good one?
That actually is a really good one.
I was rifling through my closet now in my head, thinking about the random jerseys that I have. I have a Joe Thornton Bruins jersey.
Okay.
That's another good one. I'm trying to think of the other ones I have. Ndamukong Suh. Lions.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
The Leinart one might be the best one.
With what you've given, I think the Leinart might be the best one.
The Leinart might be the best one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got at least like one random jersey.
Everyone's got, a bunch of random jerseys.
You have to have that. I mean, then I've got
a LeBron Cavs jersey.
Yeah. I've got like the movie character ones, like a Jesus Shuttlesworth and a, Shane Falco and, all the Bobby Boucher.
Yeah. So
what's your go-to jersey right now? If you're going to Giant.
I don't wear any jerseys.
I don't wear jerseys anymore. They're in the back of my closet, which is why I was mentally rifling through them. They're like in back there with like I swam at Michigan State, so I have my like varsity jacket back there, which also like you don't wear to the grocery store. You're not like, hey, let's put on my Michigan State Spartans. It's a cool jacket, though. I'm not going to get rid of it.
You know, it's just, it's retro. That's all,
But I can't remember last time I wore those jerseys, even if I went to like a game. Like, there's no way I'm wearing those. Those obviously don't apply. I also don't like when people wear jerseys of guys who don't play. Unless you're wearing, like, if you're going to Orioles game and you're wearing Cal Ripken, I gotcha. You know, you're going to a Nats game and you're wearing Ryan Zimmerman. That's fine. You want to wear like guys who are like pretty important, but you're not going to wear a guy who played like two games, like a Matt Leiner Arizona Cardinals jersey. Like, get out of here with that. What are you doing?
Even worse, when if somebody goes to a baseball game and two teams are playing and they wear a jersey of neither one of the teams playing,
also ridiculous.
I hate that.
I will loan
so
you
much.
A plain T-shirt. Marlins you can just wear
man.
A plain T-shirt.
Marlins man made it cool, and it's not cool.
No.
And by the way, I met Marlins man, decent guy, but I absolutely hate that bit. I hate it so much. Can't stand it. All right. Zach Kiefer is going to jump on with us next. We're going to look ahead to this weekend's NFL games for teams that are actually in the playoffs. We'll talk to him next on Overtime. Britt Ciroli, Nick Ashew, Overtime. Britt, we're on air. We're on the air right now.
I'm ready. Now I'm paranoid. I'm not going to fill my water bottle up the rest of the show.
I love it. You came back in and you're just like, oh, you guys aren't on air yet. I'm like, no, we are. We just came back. You know, you got find the water here. It's like you got to go to like the dispenser special machine thing they have in the kitchen. It's
to
a
be fair, bit. As I said in the opening segment, I haven't been in studio in like 3.5 years.
Yeah.
My first son was born and I was trying to fill up my water bottle. Neither water fountain work. The refrigerator filter like does not really, the angle is weird. It kept just spilling. And I finally fill my water bottle up. I stroll back in. You're still complaining about the Wizards trade.
We can call it complaining if you want.
And you're still angry about the Wizards trade. And I figured you were just, talking, shooting the breeze with our producer.
Yeah.
And in fact, you were on air letting everybody know your grievances again. That you don't think it's a trade that you would have made.
I think it's a trade that if he plays, it's a bad, bad thing. I will say this. You were brave to use the fridge filter in there. I have no idea the last time.
And the red light is on. So I was like, ugh. And then I finally did find the water filter. The red light was on both of them, which means the filter has not been changed in God knows how long. So now I'm not even going to drink my water because I don't want to have to use the restroom because I don't want to get up and miss another
show. You have plenty of time now. We will make sure we work for you. In fact, Zach Kiefer will give us some time now, so you'll get an opportunity here. Senior NFL writer at The Athletic. It's funny, Zach. We spent the whole show, shockingly, talking about, everything going on with the Commanders and all of the coaching rumors and everything, yet there's actual real NFL playoff games coming up this weekend. I kind of want to leave it open to you at the beginning here because Britt and I were talking during the break, and it just feels like a very wide-open NFL playoffs this year. A lot of parity. Even when the Chiefs are in it and don't look the best, we usually go, the Chiefs will find a way to get to the Super Bowl, and that's not happening this year. So when you look at really both sides, the AFC and the NFC, is there a team that you kind of put above the rest that you have the most confidence in, or do you also pretty much look and go, this is still a lot of parity here?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but to answer your question, no. Like, I don't. And I know I'm supposed to have a better answer than that, but to piggyback on your thought, I mean, this is as wide open as we have seen in a long, long time. My employer, The Athletic, asked me today, like, to make my picks for the Super Bowl, and I was like, I don't know. Like, I really don't think there's a favorite in either conference. And I know we have, you know, two really good one seeds, two really good two seeds, but it's wild in the AFC. You mentioned the Chiefs not being in it. There's no Patrick Mahomes. There's no Joe Burrow, and there's no Lamar Jackson. It just feels like the new frontier this year. You can make a case for any team. You really can, 1 through 7 in either conference. And I think this weekend's games are going to be wild. I could see every single one of the road teams winning, which sounds crazy, but in the NFL, the league of parity, it's not that crazy of a concept.
Because of that, Zach, and because of some of those big names you threw out there, does it feel like with Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills, who are a 6 seed, they're going into Jacksonville playing the Jaguars on Sunday. Does it feel like we thought they had this huge window, and now it feels like with Josh Allen that window is shrinking some? Does it feel like it's almost not now or never, but this is a big year for him and for the Bills, because you can't say, oh, there's Pat Mahomes, oh, there's Burrow, oh, there's Lamar Jackson, or even a few years ago, Tom Brady. Like, all those big boys are out of it, and it feels like it is his time to kind of put up or shut up a little bit.
Yeah, maybe it's not now or never, but it's certainly, if not now, when? Like, when are they going to do this? And I do think there's an interesting conversation that happens in Buffalo if they don't win on Sunday against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like, if they can't beat Jacksonville and they're one and done again in this guy's prime, I mean, this guy is Superman. Like, this guy is a once-in-a-generation talent. And you could understand some of the losses in years past. Like, you lose to a red-hot Joe Burrow. They've lost so many times to the Chiefs, and I've covered all those games. And a lot of times after that game, you look at Josh Allen in his locker and you say, this guy did everything he possibly could. There was the 13 seconds game. There was last year when he played out of his mind and they still lost. So, you know, those are these shootouts, and you're like, this is more the Bills' defense letting him down. But without Lamar and without Patrick Mahomes and without Joe Burrow in the playoffs, he's the best quarterback in this field. He's the only Superman that can win games by himself. The others are more offense-dependent, defense-dependent, coach-dependent. The door is wide open. You're right. And I just think, if not now, when? But again, they have a really tough road, and it starts on the road in Jacksonville. And I know that doesn't sound that intimidating because it's Jacksonville. That's the hottest team in the league right now. And it's got a coach of the year candidate in Liam Cohen. So it's not surprising to me if things get dicey in Buffalo on Sunday and Monday if they do not get a W.
Zach, when you look at the top of the AFC, I mean, it's a lot of young quarterbacks that have, you know, and certainly very little experience, if any, in the playoffs. How much do you factor that in? Because obviously there are coaches that do, and there's some good defenses with, say, the Chiefs and certainly the Broncos, but you have quarterbacks that don't have a lot of experience in this setting.
Yeah, it's a real thing, and you're not going to hear this at the podiums, and you're not going to hear this from the coaches, and you're not going to hear this until weeks and months later, but it's a very real thing, and a lot of these quarterbacks, you know, even Lamar Jackson struggled a lot early in his career in the playoffs. Now, Mahomes is kind of a little bit different. But again, he couldn't get through Brady the first year. So there's almost like a rite of passage that you have to climb. Now, who are the vets in the AFC? We just talked about one, Josh Allen. He's the guy. He's the one guy in this conference with all the playoff experience, except for the really old guy in Aaron Rodgers. But I just don't think Pittsburgh has the team. I don't see them beating Houston on Monday night. The other one is Trevor Lawrence, and he's had a lot of success in the playoffs before. But again, he's back with a new coach, so it's a little bit of a different feel. But you know, to go back to your original point, like the first two seeds in the AFC, Bo Nix has played one playoff game, did not play well in a blowout loss to the Bills last year. And Drake May, who might be the MVP by the time this is all done in a month or so, this is going to be his playoff debut. And he's got a tough task playing the Chargers and a really good defense and a really good defensive coordinator. So again, it just wouldn't surprise me if these younger quarterbacks stumble, even if they're the higher seeds.
Talking to Zach Keeper, who covers the NFL for The Athletic. Zach, when you look at this schedule, there's so many good matchups, as you said. We don't know what's going to happen. It could be a crazy weekend. Are there certain games that you are circling? Like, for me, that Green Bay-Chicago matchup, I think, is going to be awesome. You know, you're talking about within the division, two really great franchises. Like, is there a game for you that you're like, I cannot wait to watch this game?
Yeah, I don't want to steal your answer, but that was going to be that was going to be my pick. I do have another one, but...
No, agree with me, and now I look smart. Look at this.
I mean, you just... Yeah. I mean, you can't beat Bears-Packers in the playoffs. You can't beat a matchup between two head coaches who have been pretty honest, don't really like each other that much.
Yes.
There is two young quarterbacks. Caleb Williams is going to be making his playoff debut. That's going to be fun. And sort of the underlying tension, which I always love to follow, is Matt LaFleur in Green Bay has done nothing but win since he got there. And it really does feel like if they don't get this win, his job might be a conversation they have in Green Bay. And that sounds crazy. But again, we just saw John Harbaugh get fired in Baltimore after 18 seasons. And, you know, 12 or 13 of those were really good winning seasons. So things move fast in the NFL. And again, Green Bay has been a perennial playoff team. But again, they've been a seventh seed a lot of years. And they have a really good roster. And I just wonder if things might change after this weekend if they do not get a win at Soldier Field. The other one for me is a really, really good one. San Francisco is at Philly, and it's kind of the tale of two different teams, right? San Francisco has a really banged up roster, but you love the coach. Like, you just love what Kyle Shanahan has done this year with Fred Warner being out and Nick Bosa being out and all those guys on that defense being out. I just think he's the coach of the year. But then conversely, Philly's got an absolutely loaded roster, and I don't know how much Philly fans trust their coach, Nick Sirianni, although – you know, 11 months ago, he put a Super Bowl banner up in the stadium. So that's going to be a juicy one. I just think so many of these games, like so many in the NFL season, are going to come down to 2 or 3 points. It's going to come down to a field goal. It's going to come down to the fourth quarter. And that's why it makes it such great theater.
You know, it's funny when you mention the Eagles. It's like Eagles fans are just never happy, Zach. It's a weird thing. It's how that goes. They just won a Super Bowl. Though I get it, because if you look at that offense, it's been spotty with the play calling and inconsistent, and there's a lot of drama around that offense, and A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts and even Nick Sirianni, like you mentioned. Does that give you a lot of pause? Because that defense, obviously, is very, very good in Philly. They're the defending Super Bowl champs, yet at the same time, we're looking at them, and it feels like every week there's something else about somebody that's not happy there.
It's crazy. They're like the biggest soap opera in sports. And yet, if you look at Nick Sirianni's record, the guy is like, I don't know, like 50-11 or something. And since he took over, I'm making that number up, but like he's won at an insane clip in Philadelphia. So I could see this going two ways. Like, I could literally see it going two ways for Philly. They could come out, lay an egg on Sunday, not have anything remotely regarding an offense that moves the ball up and down the field. That would not surprise anybody, right? Because they've been so stifled offensively, and they lose. And it wouldn't surprise us because the signs were there all year. Or conversely, it really wouldn't stun me if they went on a run. They're getting Lane Johnson back, who's, I don't know, among the top six best players in football. Their big right tackle, and he makes a difference because that's Saquon Barkley. That's the run game. That's more time to run slower developing plays down the field to hit A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, all that stuff. So it wouldn't stun me if this team caught fire. They have been through the ringer the last couple years, and like Nick said this week, they have played in a lot of big games. These moments are not going to be too big for them. That does matter in the playoffs. It really does, like reverting to your question about the young quarterback. So nothing would surprise me with Philly. They could lay an egg and get beat by the 49ers on Sunday and go home for the year, or they could get hot, run the table, and be playing in Santa Clara in a month because they have that much talent and they've been through this before.
All right, Zach, good stuff, man. And thank you for pointing out that we are helping us remember that we actually have real football games this weekend and we're not talking about, you know, offensive coordinators in Washington. Good stuff, man.
Thanks, Zach.
Sweet coaching, sir, for sure. Thanks, guys.
Zach Kiefer, senior NFL writer at The Athletic. Anthony Armstrong, former Redskins receiver, going to join us next on Overtime.